This is Jack Gibson from Exodus, and you're listening to Music City Metal.
Music City Metal. Boy, this is going to be exciting. Music City Metal, part two. Boy, I just can't jump in. You do the intro, would you please,
Mary? You just did an excellent intro, Larry. I'm going to leave that because I am the editor-in-chief now.
All right, now.
Right?
We can go on a real tangent and talk about modern primate, Jordan. Do you know the theory of the modern primate and how we became human? It's a band name, by the way. Basically, that monkeys took some psychedelics.
Stoned ape theory,
yeah. That's where. Did I have it wrong? It created the modern primate.
Yeah.
What? That's how this all came about?
Mm-hmm. Stoned ape theory, yeah. It's a real thing. There's a theory that monkeys got a hold of some natural psychedelics, and it's what began them to...
Which means they were eating poop. They were eating poop, and they accidentally ate the mushroom that was growing in the poop.
Ew.
And because they ate poop, they became slowly smarter. Though the study with mushrooms in general, I think is fucking fantastic. Because it you would never know, but literally mushrooms can talk to each other from long distances away. Like they send these weird signals to each other. They're literally living.
Now you're getting into quantum physics.
I mean, that's mechanics. Yeah. That's the whole thing about mushrooms in general, though. Yeah. That's why they say, it's the one thing that you could eat that literally increases your brain function and whatever. I mean, it makes you trip balls, but at the same time, I don't know. Go fucking listen to Joe Rogan if you want to know about.
Yeah,
that kind of
he
stuff.
Did. He did a lot. He did a whole. He did hours on DMT, and that was intense. But yeah, And he was talking from a experience or whatever. Now, whether or not that's the answer to all mental health, I don't know. But if you're listening to this, then you haven't heard part one. Go back and listen to part one. It was a pretty cool, deep discussion. And we're going to continue on tonight. We'll see where this takes us. But
I mean, can we talk about the shrooms? Can we talk about shrooms and
whatever? I'll be transparent and honest.
I mean, I really do think that the research that's happening between, taking psychedelics and it helping with mental health, honestly, should be taken more seriously. I remember the first time that I ever did shrooms, and it was through a very, very, very rough period of my life. My best friend died at the time, and, I started going down my first downward spiral into the world of drugs, sex, and rock and roll. And I ended up going to a lake with some friends, and we all took, around a gram or something like that. And then as the day progressed, it was an hour later, I hadn't felt anything yet. So, dumbly, I took more.
Oh, no!
But I'll tell you what.
Spit it out.
It was a beautiful, beautiful day. It was, just one of those things that you find on like a desktop. It's just one of those the sun is setting perfectly. There's purple, orange, blue, yellow, red
Bobby Ross
everywhere.
Painting.
It was sick. But I also think it was because I was on shrooms that it looked so good. But all of that happening, it literally I ended up having a whole fucking day to deal with on that stuff. And a lot of it, ended up involving not so fun parts where I found myself basically facing another version of me. It was really fucking crazy. I ended up basically, instead of giving it the attention that it wanted, I turned away. It was a whole moment for me. But I turned away from it and decided that was no longer something that I wanted to hold on to in general. And the rest of the day was just, thinking about life and thinking about what I wanted to do, what I wanted to stop doing. And it literally changed just my entire perspective on everything. The next day, I started just doing things better, I guess. You know, like, it was just like I was going through so much shit, and, you know, it started off as just another day of finding a way to escape. And instead, it was like a huge life lesson. I literally, I feel like I grew up in that moment, just in that, because I ran away at 17, and between 17 and that time was just like straight tomfoolery. I was just doing whatever I could at the time. Nothing about my lifestyle at that point was responsible at all. But the next day, I wanted to do better. The next day, I, like, you know, remembered everything that I went through the day before. And I honestly think that there's a lot of people out there who, if they were to have the same type of scenario, you know, put into a really, really positive environment, something beautiful or something that feels like homely to you, and then, you know, dive into yourself and really look towards what's bothering you, because we all have a hardcore problem, I think, with trying to avoid what, you know, the problem is in our head at the time, because you have to push it away. Oh.
That's a good riff, isn't it?
I think we all have a problem with trying to, you know, push things to the side for the moment, but we end up doing that so much to where it all becomes just like this clump, this ball of bullshit in our head that we never actually dealt with. We just had to keep going. And that stuff, when you're able to, like, dissect it and pull it apart in little chunks, I really think it's beneficial to your mental health to be able to do that. And sometimes you forget things as well. And I fully believe that shrooms, like, do something that just makes you be able to look past all of that and look inside, you know, like you said, your spirit, and actually get to have a conversation with it and stuff like that.
It makes it one common thing, and I'll personally, about my experience, mine was my first experience with psilocybin was planned and talked about with a counselor for 6-7 months before I touched it. And then it was a very small dose, and then what I thought was going to be a guided situation ended up being on my own. Now, I spoke with him on the phone, but two things, exactly what you said, but to summarize with me, is forgave myself, which we were talking about it earlier today. You know, like, I know how to love God and love others, but it was loving myself that was. So when you really forgive yourself, but then also you're never able to really lie to yourself anymore without catching it.
Yeah, you can't do that.
It's a permanent change.
It hurts when you try it.
Right. Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, I don't know. That's simply put. I mean, we could do hours and hours just on psilocybin, and hopefully before this year's out, it will be an official treatment, because it is helping people. If it's done the right way, in the right context, with the right help. But same thing, yours was completely on your own. You were doing it for one reason, and the result was not what you expected.
I was just supposed to blind myself again for another day. That's it, you know?
Yeah.
But my brain, I guess, told me, hey, you need to deal with this. Like, you need to right now. And it worked out. I also ended up trying to microdose for an entire month straight at one point. It was about 3 years ago. That, I don't recommend that. I don't recommend that at all. Because I kept, like, trying and trying and trying and trying, but each trip was getting worse. And when I say microdose, I mean, like, I wasn't taking, like, a whole eighth at the time, but I was taking at least a stem and a pod at a time.
Yeah.
Every day, and if it didn't hit good enough, I would do it a little bit more.
That's the one thing, because they're not regulated, they're grown, and there's no equal distribution of the active ingredient amongst one plant to another yet. So that's the problem. When you think you're taking, you know, a small amount for a microdose, it either is nothing or it's not a microdose.
Is it just me, though, or is it, like, maybe, like, the fact that, like, if they make it into a pill form one day, I feel like taking a pill versus taking the just the straight out the dookie stuff, Like, I mean, think about it. Like, you're like, man, you want to take some shrooms? And your homie's like, yeah, man. And then you pull out a pill. And he's like, what the fuck is that, man? Like,
that's just so that the powers to be can make their buck on it to synthesize it. But again, a whole nother subject. So, yeah, I think we could do a whole episode on the benefits, but let's get in a little bit, take it to the next level of where we were.
Back to the dock, cold place.
We are going to keep this metal, and we're going to talk about artists also that were open about it. That was what their music was based on, was some sort of mental illness. I know Peter's right at the top of your list. Where do you want to take us, Mary? You want to
start? I'm going to start this.
Oh, yeah, you're going to talk about your boy, your boy Peter. Your boy Peter. Go ahead.
Oh, Peter, how you have it made.
Sweet molasses.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. That phrase mental illness, I know we talked about it earlier, that just the illness part of it gives such a stigma and such a, I don't know, couldn't we all be mentally ill with something? Don't we all have a spiritual malady of some kind?
Absolutely.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, just to say, because you have depression and anxiety, everybody goes through some little bit of depression and anxiety. And why do those two things go together? If you're depressed, you don't want to get out of bed. You don't want to, you know, go forward with anything sunshine and unicorns. Isn't the anxiety that you're all tore up? So how are you down in the dumps and all tore up at the same time? My head can't wrap around why those two diagnoses are put together all the time now. Do you notice that?
Yeah.
Depression and anxiety. Can you have one without the other? Are they not exclusive of each other?
I really feel like they should also, the term anxiety, like the definition of anxiety, what anxiety is, I don't know if maybe it is a thing that needs to happen, because if you overlook the small stuff, the big stuff, you know, can't be caught as quickly and everything. But like when I hear someone say that their anxiety is bothering them, like, you know, you're just like driving in a car and someone's like, my anxiety is just up to here right now. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a difference between that, which is just common emotions of anger or frustration or, you know, nervousness or things like that. Like the word nervous is what I'm basically steering towards. I feel like some things is more on the lines of nerves versus actual anxiety, because actual anxiety is like that guy talking about the spider theory, where you have a spider on your arm. What are your first reactions? Imagine that, but slapping the spider off and it not going away. No matter what you do, the fear that was inside you will just not go away, to where like you want to harm yourself or, you know, get into drugs, alcohol, do anything to numb it, that type of stuff. I feel like just today a little bit anxiety, the term is just getting used mostly.
Yeah, right.
Well, according to Google, because Google knows everything, anxiety is the sense of uneasiness, distress, or dread you feel before a significant event. So
what if it's after?
I said before. Yeah, what about after or during?
Well, looking back, is that then it's regret and not anxiety?
I don't know.
I have more anxiety. That's a about good question. What happened yesterday or 5 years ago than what I'm standing in front of.
It's gone though. Okay, we can go there on another.
But see, that's the thing. That's fucking
this is actually from anxiety.org.
Oh, wow.
Well, what? So because doctors said it, it's correct?
No, not necessarily, but I'm just saying, if you just want to have a starting point to work from.
Okay.
It's saying that it's the mind and body's reaction to a stressful, dangerous, or unfamiliar situation. So it's a reaction to something.
So fight or flight.
Right.
Right.
So somebody driving around in the car freaking out, and their level, you know, the example that you just said.
Maybe that wasn't the best thing.
But people have said that, though. But how can you put such a strong word on something? Like, it's traffic.
That's what I'm saying. That word is a strong, strong word.
Right.
And when you use it, I feel like, I don't know, working in the service industry, everybody has anxiety now. Or at least that's what they say. And it's just common to hear someone talk about their anxiety like, you know, it's just a regular old emotion type thing and not what anxiety really hardcore can be. So it always felt weird to hear people talk about it so loosely. You know, like I rarely hear someone to say, man, my manic depression is really kicking in today. You know, like
that would be a terrible situation to be in.
I think what I'd like to do, Mayor, is make sure we listen to, just before we came in and record, we had dinner together and we listened to the Loudwire YouTube video. And then also, that Michael LaRocco, who did a TED talk on metal. So I'd like to put links to those in the notes.
Sure.
For people to check out other things, because
I did.
We were just looking for, hear what other people were saying and then take a topic to build off of. But that's like, they were saying not only mental illness over, and this isn't being critical, but they said depression, anxiety, it went together every time mm-hmm. when either of the two were talking about it. And
programming.
Yeah. But I just think it's natural. It's just become natural to put those two things together. I definitely suffer from anxiety here and there, but I wouldn't call myself depressed. Currently,
right, that's what I'm saying. Can they be exclusive of each other? I don't know. Yeah. I just think that's the way Big Pharma wants you to think about things. But
I think they're definitely separate. You know, you can have one or the other. But why are they always put together?
Let's look into that for next time. I didn't mean to cut you off. What were we going to say?
Oh, no, I think that was that it?
I don't know. There was a breath. I think I caught the breath. Yeah. I'm just going to wrap the depression and anxiety comments with this, that, you know, the modern, the secular way of dealing with depression and anxiety is meditation and yoga, whatever. I was going to make a yogurt joke. You know, those type of things. There's apps for that, right? There's Headspace. There's there's some other one they advertise now. I can't think of another mindfulness app.
Meditainment is the one that I bought a lifetime prescription.
Yeah.
We're so trained. We're talking about Big Pharma. Bought a lifetime prescription. No, a lifetime subscription. It's meditainment.com, and they're really good ones. They're 20-minute guided meditations based on what? Do you just pain relief or calm, go to sleep? They have like each subject matter, and it's a, you know, beautiful woman's voice with an English accent, really calm. So that's helped me quite a bit over the years. But that's something you got to do. Like, it's just like practicing an instrument or something. It takes time, but after, you know, the first few months I was doing it without fail, I noticed a difference and a lot.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I agree. So that's the secular way. If you want to use the word secular, I don't know what I don't know. That sounds so churchy, but it's not meant to be. But I am going to go to church here for a minute, right? Philippians 4:6, Larry.
Mm-hmm. You asking if I have it memorized?
If you don't, that's okay.
No.
Be anxious for nothing. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything, through prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God that passes all understanding will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus, right? Even if you pull that back into the secular world, that's even part of the 12 steps.
Mm-hmm.
Step 11, right. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God
as we understood him.
Praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. But, right, there's clearly even from a spiritual standpoint.
Right.
Be anxious for nothing. So even the people back 2,000, 3,000 years ago were freaking out about something. They had, you know, like, it's not, right. Anxiety is not like a new thing, but from what I'm reading from a biblical standpoint and just from modern times now, what they're saying is stop for a second, quiet your mind, pray, meditate, take a second, breathe.
Let it go. Give it up to something bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Put it in a bubble and blow it away.
Put it in a bubble and blow it away. And it doesn't mean that it's going to, like, go away. Your problems are not just going to, like, go in the bubble and disappear out into outer space. But at least for that moment in time, for me, you can get that peace to be able to make the next right decision, right? Because a lot of times when you're in a state of anxiety, for me, my mind is just a big bowl of spaghetti. I can't think straight. I can't concentrate. I can't do the task that's in front of me. I get scatterbrained. You know, that's not a good place to make the next right decision from. So, I don't know. I just wanted to tie all those things together because no matter what you believe or don't believe, I mean, prayer and meditation somewhere, I don't care who you're praying to, but there's something greater than us that's got, has just some kind of calming effect. Why not take advantage of that?
I've yet to find solace in anything but music. You know, I grew up with a lot of the stuff as an adult that I deal with. And I tried many, many different religions and books and scriptures and just... I thought I at one point would just become a human textbook of religious knowledge, but I didn't. I forgot most of it already. But I tried, you know. I tried so hard and got so far. And I've also, you know, I've yet to find any meditation. My brain just, I can't stop my brain ever. I'm pretty sure my eye's twitching right now talking about it.
So what do you do to find quiet?
Oh, man. It's, you know,
loud music?
That's a really good fucking, yeah. That's like the one escape that I have found. Like, you know, I wish I had some better things. I'm trying to do exercising. Mm-hmm. I would like to go outside more, you know, do something. I don't know. But right now it's just been throwing on the headphones and smoking half a pack of cigarettes to get through that moment. And you know, about 2 hours later, after chain smoking and pacing and listening to music, that is like, that's the fastest. I don't think that's a good thing. I know it's not a good thing. I probably even shouldn't be saying this right now to the people. But, like, that's me. I can't, you know, it used to be just throw on something on TV or read a book or, you know, something. As a kid, it was really small things that I could, like, grasp onto because that's all I fucking know at the time. But as an adult, it's much harder to find that. And for the other people who can't find, you know, a religion or a belief system yet or, you know, meditation or anything that, like, most people have at least been able to hear of, I encourage to go and do some research. Because that's the point that I am at. I'm about to have to start Google. Like, you know, I'm back. You know, you can go to therapy. You can go to psychiatry. You can try out the meds and stuff. But at the same time, that's never going to be enough. It's like an all-day, everyday thing if you, you know, are anchored down by something pretty bad and you want to get out of it. So I just encourage people to actually just be smart. Stop reading things on social media. Do your own research, maybe even pull out a few old ass books of people who were back then looked upon like they were stupid, but you know, today they could make a lot of sense. And also I encourage myself to do all these things. I'll swear upon nothing right now. I'll try.
Jordan, your thoughts?
Well, one of the greatest horror writers of the early 20th century repurposed his angst and dread into, I guess, artistic expression. H.P. Lovecraft, he was definitely, I guess, filled with an overwhelming sense of angst and despair due to personal life and all this other stuff. But in the sense of creating beauty, I think that, I mean, creating beauty in art, you can easily use any negative form of mental health is, I guess, the footwork or the grounding, and just see what that can create. And then in the end, you have something purposeful. But yeah, and musicians do that as well. But yeah, that's all I have to say about that.
Thanks, Jordan. That's very insightful. I didn't think about that. H.P. Lovecraft.
Just pick a song.
Okay, yeah, so there is one band that I would love to bring back to the light, because this is a band that I listened to when I was a kid, and they were, like, just kind of, like, blowing up in the local music scene and, you know, started, like, you know, blowing up on, like, MySpace and all this stuff. Framing Hanley.
Why don't I remember that
name? Is it Hanley or Hanley? I can't remember, but it was like, dude, the way this dude had his hair literally made me change my entire perspective on the way that I dressed. Like, seeing that music video, like, going to school, I'm pretty sure I was only, like, maybe, like, fifth grade, sixth grade at the most. Their Lollipop cover came out and dropped, and it was, like, the coolest thing that I ever saw to that point. And for some reason, I've been like,
Hanley, I remember them. Mm-hmm. I don't recognize these songs though. Like, there's one 13 years ago. It was called Hear Me Now.
Hear Me Now. That's a fucking banger. That entire EP or album, whatever it is. I can't remember how many songs are in it, but that entire thing was a banger. I swear up and down, you know, I've never met the people in my entire life. I've seen them around this town before, but, like, I've never gone up and, like, said anything to them before. But, you know, I fucking I love that first EP, man. It was so it was emo.
10 million views. The best, all right, let's ever. Check it out. We'll do some local music before the episode's over. What,
yeah, it says they're from here, and it says Brandon Wooten was a past member. Is that one of the Wooten brothers?
Yes. Wooten? I don't know what.
Who people? Wooten. The Wooten brothers?
I don't know who.
Well, Wooten. You better go do your Nashville homework. You better go look up who them Wooten brothers are.
I'm sorry.
They play at Thur and Lindsley all the time. She said he's so sweet, I wanna lick the wrapper. And she hits me like a lollipop, like a lollipop. Show me what I
juicy for you. Call me so I can make it juicy for you. Call me so I can get it juicy.
Music City Metal, that was Framing Hanley and...
what?
Lollipop.
Music City Metal. Framing Hanley. That was cool. Song was Lollipop. From here, I guess, huh?
From here, so, dude.
Yeah. All right. There you go.
I mean, think about it. Before they were doing like 14, super heavy rap covers, it was like stuff like that.
14 years ago.
But was it 14? Oh, man.
Yeah, according to the post here. And that was a couple of, I think.
I was 11 years old when that came out.
Oh, stop. Nobody wants to hear how young you are.
That's not even, no. I feel like I'm hitting my midlife crisis already.
Well, then that means you're only living till 50, so you better hurry up and get some shit done. Because you don't, if you're at the halfway point, what the heck am I?
I'm all, my body's already falling apart at 25. What I can't imagine walking around at 50 and 60 is going to be fun. I'm going to be that old bastard with a cane beating the shit out of everyone around me just because I'm in such a miserable, horrible mood.
I highly doubt that. That's the whole point of this conversation.
How was yours?
Yes. Yeah.
He was Jordan. I say he. Jordan was 17.
Uh-huh.
I was 42.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so age aside, I think age aside in this conversation doesn't matter how old you are at this topic of conversation affects everybody. How many people do you hear? Okay, I don't know the numbers, but you hear about older people. What was that lady's name? Naomi Judd. The other Judd? Which Judd sister died? By suicide.
No, not the mom.
Okay, well, we suck as Nashvillians, but you know, whoever's listening, you know who we mean. Right. She was like our parents' age. Yeah. Like, once you get to that point, don't you kind of think like, well, I might as well just ride this out? Like, what happens to someone as an older adult that they're just like, screw this, I'm done?
Well, she had some pretty severe diagnosis herself, both mental and physical.
Okay.
And just like Robin Williams, one of the, you know, he had gotten diagnosed with a pretty severe, it's like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's put together, you know, and he didn't. After having the kind of life that they've had, that's how they want to watch everyone wither away and get, you know, get that way, whatever your imagination, or you look at someone else who has Parkinson's or has Alzheimer's or a combination of it, and you throw depression in there, they're just like, I'm done. I'm going to go out. You know, whatever, though, the thing is what's left behind and the sadness and how the sadness just kind of ekes from the fans. I felt sad for my mom. My mom loved her to death, looked up to her. You know, I was just sad for her. Like, I couldn't name five songs by her, which is really sad.
Yeah, DJ Fish. That's okay.
Thank God for computers. I had a decent mic voice and a good computer.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
And a face for radio. I'm just kidding.
Give myself any credit than that, a memory of what. I had my good sets I used to play, but.
You absolutely did.
I don't remember.
Save that for Confessions of a DJ.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is, I see your. Okay. For me, once I got to that point, I would just ride the wave. But I guess I see your point that they want to go out on their own terms or maybe on a high note so that people don't remember them as someone being sick and in the hospital and feel bad for them. Maybe that's just a different outlook. Okay, I see your point.
That is a genuine outlook, because once you hit, you know, a certain age and you do look at, like, you know, what the rest of your life may be at that point, which is just kind of pure suffering. You had a life. You probably had a good life. If you make it to like 70, I can't imagine you hate that, you know. But if you look at it afterwards and it's like my entire family has to watch me wither away, my fans have to watch me wither away. They're probably like, you know what? I've been battling this shit for years. Time for a break. And then they, you know, they just hit that point.
Yeah, I'm not. I mean, it doesn't mean
maybe right.
The right thing to do, or I'm not saying all. But I'm just saying that could be their perspective. Just they had a good life. They lived a life in the public eye, made money, did well, did a lot of things.
But at the same time, depression doesn't get easier at, you know, if right. You're still dealing with it pretty heavily at that point, I would imagine that it's probably harder because you're tired at that
some point. People, it's what pushed them over the edge. The 27 Club, all of them. You know what I mean? Jim Morrison definitely did not like being a rock star. He just wanted to be remembered as a poet who just had a sexy persona on stage, had a way to take a crowd doing, you know, that was like a natural, like, side effect of his poetry. He didn't want to be a big star, nor did Kurt Cobain. It's everything we've heard post and interviews and all that's not what they wanted. And ultimately it was either suicide or substances that took them. Jimmy, he was having a hard time with it. Those stories are real sad. He was like injecting heroin between his toes in between sets so that no one saw track marks, you know, like to hide the track marks. Like, that's how bad it got with that habit. It's really sad. Who else was doing that? There was another guy that was doing that, shooting it between his toes. Oh my gosh. Black guy from England. The Boys Are Back in Town. Help me out. What was that band? See, I'm losing it.
Where's Gary when we need him?
You know who I'm talking about.
Yes,
though.
I do. I don't know the name of that band. I feel.
He died from overdose, too. You know that song?
Oh, I know that. I know. That riff gets stuck in my head.
Tonight.
Dude, it's there. It's in my head now. It'll be there for the rest of the night, too. Remember, there was a video game I used to play that had that song on it all the time, and it was wonderful.
And I can't think of
Thin
it.
Lizzy.
Thin Lizzy, yeah. Well,
jeez, we're terrible.
I know. I'm terrible.
Memories are getting bad.
I burned too many brain cells in the 60s.
So going back to that. In the 60s? Oh, my gosh.
Just to hear people say that, I burned too many brain cells.
In the 60s?
I was one in the 60s, Jordan.
Better to burn brain cells than bridges.
At least you were something. At least you were alive.
I was born during Woodstock, but I wasn't there. That's a whole nother thing. I always ask my mother why she would not drive out to Woodstock and give birth to me in the mud.
Yeah, and you should have seen her face every time you asked.
That was abhorrent and sacrilegious to say that. To her, don't say that. That's disgusting.
Oh, geez.
Like, Mom, we'd have been famous. There was only three others born. I'd have been number four.
Oh, Trudy.
Yeah.
So back to the age.
It was a joke anyway. It was only a few hours down the road.
Poor Trudy. What she had to deal with you.
I know.
Yes, oh, okay,
rest
so.
Rest in peace, actually, yeah. 5-year anniversary.
Sorry.
Trudy Fish. Did I just kill it that bad? Did it went that
no.
quiet?
No, go ahead. I was just bringing us back to the age categories. That was all.
I don't even know how to begin on that. Like, that has to suck.
Yeah.
I mean, you're playing tough about it and everything. You can do that all day. But.
Well, it was funny. I mentioned my sister, when my dad died, I stayed in the anger part of the grief stages for about a decade. And it was extremely detrimental to my life. Extremely. Because, like, there was a point where my family just count on me disappearing for a few days. And it happened more often than I'd like to admit. Until I really, I think, learned to get past that point, which was really, really hard. because my dad had, like, you know, died of a tumor that was 98% curable and got screwed over by a doctor who completely got away with it with my dad's case. But the subsequent 13 cases against him, he lost every one and lost his license. So there was just like, and my dad died within 2 weeks of us finding out that we didn't win the lawsuit against this doctor, which like went on for 13 years. So I got stuck there really bad. And, wasn't maybe a few years before my mother died. And this is in relates to mental health and dealing with grief. One of the things that I can say helped me in general in my life was taking a long class on grief. And the whole thing was, is you're grieving, having a chronic health condition that physically I can't do what I used to do. That was the point for me being in that class, because it was doing integrative medicine to help deal with chronic pain, and taking a grief class was it. So I did that. And then not long after that, my mom came down, and when she went home, I knew it was her last trip, that she had come down for the last time, and just, it was cool. But having that, I still grieved. I went through it all, but I think I went through half of it even before she died, before she was, you know, before she passed away. And I think it's as a mental health tool. I mean, sometimes grief sends people into a depression that sadly they never get out of, you know. And I'm not a mental health professional by any means, but it changed it. It took me 12 years to mention my father's without bursting into tears, and now I just, you know, I'm able to talk about it without all that. But I think that grief thing's important, grief counseling or learning it, even if you, before you have to go through grief, grieve something else. You've had some loss, personal loss. Like, you can grieve anything. Everybody always automatically goes to, death, you know, but there's a lot of things we can grieve, relationships, whatever.
I don't think you have to qualify you saying that you're not a mental health professional. I think sometimes those, some people I've encountered hide behind doctorates and plaques and diplomas on the wall. We all of us sitting at this table have life experience that counts for something, mm-hmm. you know? If we can share our experience, strength, and some kind of hope with whoever's listening to this for free, you know, you're not paying to go sit with somebody who's going to just sit there writing things down, and you don't know what the heck they're writing about you, you know?
Yeah.
Just because they have a diploma on the wall. For some people, yes, that's, you need that, but don't discount what you're saying just because you're not a professional.
Okay.
I'd say you're pretty professional in all the the nonsense that's happened in...
Oh, I'm a pro at it?
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Yeah, you are.
I never even thought about how the fact... Doing this episode, I think I've been focusing on a lot of negative stuff and not talking about things that you can do to fix it or how to deal with it or how to get through with it. I guess that was the entire point of it, was to actually help people. So maybe I think we should all go around and tell a personal story about something that they had to go through, and instead of giving up, they found a way to cope with it in the moment.
Hmm.
How about that?
I like it. Who's going to start?
Well, I think what we're going to do is hit the pause button and go get some of them Scooby snacks that are out on the on the James Bottas dessert. And I'll tell you what, we will come back. What a great time to play the song Hope by Dystopian. One of my favorites on that album.
There you go.
Yeah.
Great idea.
Yeah, and then we're going to go get a snack, and then we're going to come back. Jordan is going to start. I'm just kidding.
You're the most professional one of the group.
You are the most learned and book read.
I need subject matter.
We'll have to give him homework for the next time.
Yeah, right. We may have to do part three. I don't think we're done with it. I want to figure out a way for people to connect with us and bring someone else in over the phone on it for one more part, maybe.
Are you going to do a random phone call like you did?
Oh, I can. What time is it?
No, not right now. Let's take a break.
I know. Let's take a break. Let's look what time it is.
Play the song.
Come up with our stories.
Play the song.
Okay.
Play it.
I love this band. Here they are. Hope by Dystopian Music City Metal. James Cole, Mary Fish, Jordan Sanders in the Electric Fishbowl.
On better day, hope for ourselves, hope for some breeze.
Music City Metal. There's a song called Hope by Dystopian. Love those guys, and I know that right now they are writing, recording, rehearsing, and playing tons of shows ever since, most of the Underground Network, and kudos to you. Keep it up. Nothing.
Nothing. Hit the crickets button.
Isn't that what, aren't you supposed to jump in and like as a co-host?
I am. I failed my job. Fire me. Can I please be fired and go home?
All right, so we're going to talk about something that share a story of something that we overcame. Does it have to involve mental illness? I mean, I guess in a way.
Mental health.
This is metal and mental health.
This is metal and mental health. What do you got? Boy, this is tough. How about you, James? You start, because we're deciding how deep we're going
to
go.
Yeah, and you're younger, so you have a little bit less of a catalog of things to choose from. Okay. We have twice as long to pick a story.
Okay. So here's the thing. I have a mom who I've called mom from a very young age, but she's not my biological mother, but she is more of a biological mother to me than anything I ever had. So she is my mom. My biological mother, on the other hand, it's a whole fucking scenario. And to talk about it in depth would literally take hours. So we're going to shorten it down to ever since I was very young, she was around for around first four-ish years of my life. So I remembered her, you know, going into elementary school and then middle school and high school. You know, I still had the memories and, you know, all that stuff. And I since a young age, was very much trying to pursue her. So she signed her rights away at a very young age, and, you know, for good reasons, turns out. Most of my life, I did not want to listen to, you know, what my parents said about her, you know, and just in my head, it was just, you know, oh, I just want to, you know, see my mom again, really meet her, you know, get to know her, all this other stuff. So, I ended up getting that opportunity, as I got older. But like when I was younger, I ended up running away, a few different times in general. And one of them was like when I was only like 6 or 7 years old, and I just went out the door and decided I was going to go find my mom. Wow. And I legit was like gone for like almost an entire night. Like, I can't remember who found me, but someone found me walking around. Needless to say, when I was still in high school, it was something that was still very, you know, prominent to me. And when I turned 19, I got the displeasure of actually meeting her. And as a 19-year-old, it shattered my entire reality in general, I think, because, you know, I just, something I literally, like, you know, wrote about, dreamt about, you know, hoped for my entire life up to that point. And then I met her, and she was every single thing that my parents said, you know, very mentally unstable, taking drugs and stuff like that, and, you know, not taking care of herself, let alone not even taking care of my baby brother. Turns out her signing her rights away was actually a very good thing. I would have been raised in a much more unstable environment, and I think that would have greatly impacted the way that I am today, because, you know, instead of going through the hell that it actually would have been and the hell that I actually turned out to going through while I was with her that I did not know about until later, you know, it really proved its own point. I had to learn the hard way that truth fucking hurts. And after that, it took a minute, you know, it took a while, but I mean, I told her, I was like, you know, hey, I don't want any contact. I don't, you know, you're living a life that's just like, it's not good for me. I don't like this. I don't like any of this. I wish I could take it all back at this point, you know? And as an adult, it actually helped me, because most of my life, one of the main reasons why I was depressed all the time was that I was abandoned as a child, you know, in my head. And as an adult, that was something that I was able to overcome at an older age. You know, if I was a kid and that would have happened, it would have fucking, you know, massacred me. But as an adult, I was able to go, oh, okay, so this is the reality of the situation. Is it better to walk away from it completely and, you know, cherish what I have and what I have had, you know, versus wishing upon a star? And that ended up going into a lot of things for me, life lesson-wise in general. I was able to overcome my mommy issues. There's still a few stray hairs that, you know, we got to get organized still, I think. But I like the person that I am, knowing what I know, more than the sad boy that was feeling alone all the time for the wrong reasons.
Thing is you're able to articulate the good and the bad and what you went through, and I think that's beautiful that at least you understand it. Had a lot of things to go sideways in our family, but they were there. Mary.
My thoughts.
Yeah, you're not jumping in. You're
I'm thinking. I don't know. This is a little different an atmosphere than our normal banter of a show.
What do we talk about? I mean,
things that we've overcome. I think the fact that we've been together for 25 years is a statement in and of itself.
Yeah.
And it's not
beautiful. It's a round of applause for the human fucking race,
right?
That this can still happen.
25 years.
I mean, just based on
it's our 21st anniversary. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, I mean, the whole thing in 06, my post surgical crash and burn, and that we overcame not only, you know, the damage to your job, your career, and my career and my image in this town, like being arrested on television, it affected your career directly. And
it did. I think I've recovered.
Yeah.
Nicely.
We overcame all that, and we're still together. She had an executive position with the bank, and when I got arrested, her boss said, divorce him or you're going to get demoted.
So I took the demotion.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Now that is a woman.
And I don't sit here in a prideful way and go, oh, look at me. I mean, the one thing that I do remember is Will, and who's no longer here on earth with us, but he called me an oak tree, and I really didn't understand what that meant.
Yeah.
He's a very deep thinker, but he called me an oak tree, and I guess that was his left-handed way of complimenting me and, mm-hmm. you know, thinking about it. Maybe I can't say I did that all on my own. I know you guys are sick of hearing about my 12-step program, but...
Who said that? No, not sick of it. Not at all.
My 12-step program is the only reason I'm alive.
I have a lot of gratitude and to that program for us.
Maybe the only together. Reason you're alive.
And not a true crime podcast right now.
Right. Exactly. This is
Don't
a
get me wrong. I'm
success
sure
story.
Crossed your mind, and I've earned a couple of those. But yeah, we did overcome it, I would say. Not saying, oh yeah, we beat it, but it took a long time. It was many, many years of starting over, not just with work and reputation and business and careers, but just us too. That's all. I want you to talk.
You know, I'm sorry, this is sidetracking, but like, if they made like a crime special about you two, like, think about it. It's on like, okay, like one of y'all kills one of y'all, okay, and then like, you know, like it's like just dastardly. It's all over social media. One of you is playing the victim, and oh, I miss them so much, and all that other crap. And like, there's just like brick by brick of lies that just get involved, okay, right? And then when they release it on Netflix, right, ooh. Right, here's the title. Because you end up getting caught in the end, right? How to Catch a Fish.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I like that. Oh, God. I like that. That's going to be our autobiography. Or
that was good.
Name. I like that. How to Catch a Fish.
People do like our names when we introduce. Aw, Larry Mary Fish. That's easy to remember. Or Larry and Mary because it rhymes.
Because it rhymes. But back to what I was saying is that, you know, you've talked about your journey and your attempts at successful recovery and what you've done to get there. And the flip side of that is that, you know, the other people in the household, they say that addiction affects 40 people from that one person can ripple out into 40 people from your inner circles to your outer circles to your work to your mailman.
Yeah.
And down the line, you know, I didn't grow up in an alcoholic household, but I grew up with children of alcoholic parents. And even though that skipped a generation, it still had an effect. I can say this now with confidence and not with pride, but I'm thankful that even though the choices you made as an individual affected us as a unit, I can look back on that with some kind of gratitude instead of anger now, because it brought me to a program of my own recovery. You know, I was not perfect in that situation. They always say things are 50-50. It might have been 60-40. I don't know. But any of those situations, reacting the way that I did, you had every right to smother me with a pillow.
I just figured you weren't going to make it at one point. But little by little, I don't know, we just stuck to day by day, and I did things to change too, you know. But the awkward pauses, because, okay, how deep are you going to go here? How deep? We're trying to give each other.
What are we really going to say out loud?
I'll just spill in the tea right now.
Spilling the tea. Well, I think part of the success of us, because, you know, I feel bad when I look at our friend, our closest friend group. Mm-hmm. Nobody is still with that original person
right. That
they were with 20 years ago, or that original person has passed away. Some of them are gone. And there was somebody else. It's weird. We're the only surviving couple.
Yeah, right.
Of the last two decades.
Yeah, so, a core group of friends, yeah.
And we were kind of the most messed up. I hate to say that, but we kind of were.
Maybe we should call Jamie and have him
learn
out a story. Dude, literally, I thought you guys were literally going to stab each other right.
But was that the level of anger, or was that the level of fight and drive, or a combination of all of it?
Probably a combination of all of it, but some of it was just anger.
But I think from a couple's standpoint, in any kind of relationship standpoint, you have to work on yourself before anything else is going to get fixed.
Well, here we are. We made it. 25 years together, 21 coming up in 2 months. So did you ever listen to some kind of metal to deal with some of the dark shit that we went through together? Did you ever listen to anything to get out? And if you didn't, that's okay, because I do for every situation. Like, I did listen to Type O Negative, Everything Dies, probably 25 times in a row the first week my mom passed. But then all of a sudden, it just, like I said, I moved on, you know, like I did. That was like a really part of the sadness, like literally repeat 3 times in a row and then listen a couple hours later.
Dude, that entire album.
Yeah. I'm so depressed just talking about it. No, dude, it was.
I didn't.
That's one of the most beautiful songs I've ever heard, though, you know.
Sorry, I didn't listen to metal. No, I... one of Sash Jordan's albums, Rats? Oh, God, now I can't think of the name of the album. That whole...
What was Rats?
Album is a story if you listen to it in order, which you don't ever listen to albums in order, and it drives me nuts. Because sometimes they're a story. Track one, which is...
2112.
Well, you have to.
And... basically all three of the Savior Machine albums.
Oh, this Eric Clayton.
All four of the Savior Machine albums.
Yeah, Sash Jordan. I got on a Cranberries kick the other day, and I realized that that music made sense at a certain point in time, and it doesn't make the same sense that it does now. Like, if you listen to something that you listen to for a certain purpose or for comfort or for whatever, and listen to it again at a different point in your life, and it sounds different. So the Cranberries aren't metal by any means, but Sash Jordan can...
It doesn't have to be metal.
Can that album make sense based on our story? So if you're going to put our story to words and I die first, could you use that?
Yep.
She's Canadian. She'll let you use it.
And Bucket of Rain at Your Funeral, Ripple.
Bucket of Rain. Oh, my God. It's a box.
Box of Rain. That's it.
I'll take a bucket of rain if you have it. It's bigger than a box, but it's
Grateful
only
Dead.
A box of rain.
That was close. Bucket of... There's a hole in the bucket. I would have found the right song. I would have looked up Bucket of Rain by Grateful Dead and
Bucket
Box of
Rain.
I'm like, that's it.
Good job, Fish.
What about you? What was your go-to song, like either depressed, sad, or whatever? That would burn. I'm sure you have a good
list. I've got one. Okay, but I play this both in my most worst moments and my happiest moments. Really bad, but I don't want to be me. Dude, people will tell you, like, on my Instagram, anytime that, like, I post, like, you know, like, a fucking stupid selfie or something. I rarely do the social stuff in general, but, like, I try every once in a while, you know? And it kind of just ends up being the same fucking thing sometimes. No matter what I'm putting in my story, if it doesn't involve music, I'll put the song I Don't Want to Be Me on there as the song that plays, you know, while you're listening or while you're looking at it, whatever the fuck. It is my most favorite song ever. I remember the first time I heard it, I was in the back of my dad's car, and I think I was maybe like 6 or 7 years old. And I remember being, it was like this shitty old tan car with tan leather interior. There's fucking fast food wrappers, to-go cups, trash, random, you know, sheets of music and shit, fucking just all his bibob stuff in the back seat of this shitty ass car. and just like feeling like I think that's like one of like the most memorable existence moments ever, because I remember it was fall, because it was cold outside and he had the window cracked, and I had, I think, like a red flannel on or something like that. That was just a lot of red on my body. And hearing that song for the first time, like, that's how much I love this song. I remember what it smelt like in that car because I was listening to that song for the first time.
I have those, too. I got several. Just one of them's Rush. I was about 12 the first time I'd heard real rock and roll. No, not metal by any means, but... Yeah, when you hear something that gets to the core of your spirit and soul, you'll never forget anything. What about you? You want to wrap it up? It's past your bedtime, Captain Jordan. You got a Cessna to fly.
Yeah. I'm a sex addict. No, I'm a recovering
No, it's
I fly planes now.
I know. That's what I'm loving it. You gotta give them the coordinates to our house and stick your phone out the window and take a picture. Get some aerial photography.
I feel like that's a good way to lose your phone.
No, we were just talking about, like, if you're ever upset or mad or whatever, is there a go-to song, preferably in the metal realm, that helps you deal with the emotion at the moment to get out whatever negative you got?
All of them.
All of them, yeah. Just put it on.
Six. What else?
Sick?
Six. By, dang it. just everything, man.
Yeah,
everything. Literally.
Well, that's kind of this gentleman, and we're going to put these in the notes, but that Michael LaRocco video, the TED Talk, we went and searched. If you go to YouTube and just search heavy metal, mental health. It will come up, but we are going to put the hot link in our notes, in our liner notes, and then wrap it up with a song. Should we just play some Typo to wrap it up?
I think we have to.
Yeah, I think we have to.
Which one?
Is that legal?
Well, yeah, no, we can. We just, any ad money, anything that comes in now, you know, if you put an ad in there.
Oh, man, that 3 cents I was going to get from Spotify.
Yeah.
Final thoughts.
Well.
Wait, Jordan, do you have a story of encouragement and hope? How to overcome something that may have happened to you that you could share with someone to give them hope?
I guess just enjoying the art that represents you the best and discovering your own personality. Mostly, I guess just trying to progress one's own life in the sense of what do you like doing? Because ultimately, if you just reflect on things that are not necessarily beneficial, it becomes a problem. However, I guess just seeing the beauty and hope and current afflictions, and I don't know, seeing through that, how it's just a beneficial fallacy in the sense of transformation. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of hope to be had. It's just dependent on the individual with said hope. But yeah.
Transformation. I like that.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's a good word. Because we're not who we were even yesterday.
Right.
We're us today. I like that.
And even the little bit of hope there, that even instead of all the self-loathing, somebody described that in another video in regards to Peter Still, that he was just, that was always self-loathing in a lot of his music, you know, which is what he was going through. And the hope of transformation, sometimes that's all you need, no matter how much self-loathing you do.
I love it.
Yeah, right? Got to find something good. Because I do like this song too, but... It is. It's depressing. Like, if you just were to just like not listen to the song and just read the lyrics, it's, you know, it would be pretty sad, you know. But the song changes it. Deals with something darkness, like you said, like an anthem. All right, that'll do it. Take me out, man. Thanks, man. First of all, dumping some more here. Thanks, Mary. Thanks, Jordan.
Larry, Mary, I fucking love you guys. Thank you for having me on this. And just thank you for letting me be in your life, actually, in general. You guys are fucking awesome. I am James Cole, IV, here in the Electric Fishbowl with the Fish Crew.
Beautifully done.
Hey, do you want to make the world a better place? Commit a random act of kindness to a complete stranger.